All right, so today we are in part four of Are You Saved? The 2018 version, the newest version of this. And we've been discussing the relationship between salvation, faith, and works. And we've been talking about how there's been a lot of confusion about understanding those three terms. And we defined the terms. We're not going to do that again today. And we've been exploring what those terms mean. And as we finished up in part three, we were looking at Hosea chapter one. We were looking at Yahweh having promised that he would at some point save Israel after he'd already told them, I'm not going to save you. So we kind of worked through this whole idea of that at some point, people who thought they might have been quote-unquote saved weren't as saved as they thought they were. Okay, that's what we talked about last time. But I want to pick that up here with now looking more at from that place, how then he then says, yet I will still save them ultimately. And what that process looks like is what we're going to start to explore. So let's go back to Hosea chapter 1 as kind of a reset of where we finished in part 3. And just remember what we were reading here in Hosea chapter 1. In verse 6, we hear that Hosea's wife had a child named Lo-Ruhamah. And it says, call her name Lo-Ruhamah, for no longer do I have compassion on the house of Israel so as to forgive them at all. Wow. But we learn that when he says something like this, it's not a forever thing. It's for that group of people at that time. He's not saying I will never forgive and never have compassion on Israel again. But this particular group, and by the way, we saw this with Jeremiah. We saw this with other prophets saying this particular group is not getting saved anymore. You heard this, by the way, when they came out of Egypt after they refused to go into the land. This particular group is going to die in the desert. That doesn't mean we won't have a remnant or a peace make it through, and there would not have ultimately be a deliverance of Israel. But this particular group is not getting any more compassion. And then we have in verse 9, another child is born called Lo Ami, for you are not my people and I am not for you. I don't know about you, but I never want to be on the other end of Yahweh saying, I am not for you. Because that goes kind of, if you're not for me, you're against me. If you're not with me, you're my enemy. I mean, that makes us enemies to him, basically. He's saying, I'm not for you. I don't know about you, but I think I at least can admit that I've come to a place where I can't do without him. And so if he's not for me, then it means I now have to do without him. I have to function and achieve and accomplish and move forward without him. Not a good place to be. So he said these things very strongly to this group of people through Hosea. And then he says in verse 10, yet, even though I've said this already, no compassion, no mercy, not my people, yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which is not measured nor counted. Isn't that what he promised to Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov? And it shall be in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, they shall be called, you are the sons of the living El. So there will be a time when that will reverse. What we have to understand is what causes that? What brings that about? Because clearly he said, I'm not saving, I'm not merciful on them anymore, I'm not going to be compassionate on them, they are not my people. That seems pretty well cut off. But yet in that same place, they will be referred to as the children or the sons of the living El. Well, I think part of the solution is in verse 11, and the children of Yehuda and the children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint for themselves one head and shall come up out of the earth, and for great is the day of Israel. So let's look at what this might look like. I think we can see this in Ezekiel 37. So let's go to Ezekiel 37. We'll start with the beginning of the chapter, the dry bones, and work our way through to the two sticks. And so we're going to spend much of today just in Ezekiel 37. So remember what he said, they're going to appoint for themselves one head. The two houses are going to be brought together. Okay, Judah and Israel will be brought together. He said they will come together. Okay, so I want to actually jump forward to... Okay, go to chapter 37 and verse 1. Okay, but just keep in mind, we're leading into the end of chapter 37 where he talks much more about this coming under than appointing the one king and coming together under that one king. Okay, we're going to lead into that. Verse 1, the hand of Yahweh was upon me and took me out by the spirit of Yahweh and set me down in the midst of the valley, and it was filled with bones. And he made me pass among them all around, and see, there was very many on the surface of the valley, and see, they were very dry. These were all dry bones. And he said to me, Son of man, would these bones live? And I said, O Master Yahweh, you know. Well, that's a good answer. He asked you a question. Well, I don't know, but you know. Again, he said to me, prophesy to these bones, and you shall say to them, O dry bones, hear the word of Yahweh. Okay, so we have taught over and over again what prophecy is. And what did he say to him? He said, prophesy over the bones. And what did he prophesy? Hear the word of Yahweh. What do prophets do? Speak the word of Yahweh with authority. So he said, I want you to speak my word with authority and tell those dry bones and say to them, O dry bones, hear the word of Yahweh. Hear and act upon the word of Yahweh. Thus said the Master Yahweh to these bones, See, I am bringing into you a spirit, and you shall live. And I shall put sinews on you and bring flesh upon you and cover you with skin and put a spirit in you, and you shall live, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. Now bear in mind the word ruach there, which is quoted in all of that verse there, the word ruach, also has the idea of breath. I will breathe life into you. I'm going to breathe my intrinsic nature into you. He says, and I'm going to put my nature in you, and you shall live. Now, hopefully, we've done enough study, understanding the Ruach, baptism of fire, and other places, to realize that it is through us changing into and embracing his nature that we find life. And that's also part of this Are You Saved thing. He says, so you shall live. Why? Because we're going to have his nature in us. And then he says, and you shall know and have a relationship with me and know that I am Yahweh. Verse 7, and I prophesied as I was commanded, and as I prophesied, there was a noise, and there was a rattling, and the bones came together bone to bone. And I looked and saw sinews and flesh come upon them, and the skin covered them, and there was no spirit in them. So they didn't have any breath. They didn't have any spirit in them. And he then said to me, prophesy to the spirit, prophesy, son of man, and you shall say to the spirit, thus said the Master Yahweh, come from the four winds, O spirit, and breathe on these slain so that they live. And I prophesied as he commanded me, and the spirit came into them, and they lived and stood upon their feet, a very great army. And he said to me, Son of man, these bones are all the house of Israel. Important that we hear the word all there because, remember, up to this point and continuing actually forward till today, Israel has not been all. It's been split into two camps, the northern camp called Israel and the southern camp called Judah. And so we have two houses or two set. There's a separation. But here it says, speak, these bones are all the house of Israel. See, they say, our bones are dry, our expectancy has perished, and we ourselves have been cut off. I want you to not picture just the idea of a physical resurrection. This is a metaphor. This whole picture is a metaphor. What is it, a metaphor? Picturing back to Hosea chapter 1. They had been cut off. You are not my people. I have no compassion on you. By the way, when you are cut off, it's like death. It's the dryness. It's the emptiness. We're told that at some point there'll be a famine for what? The word of Elohim. So here you see them. They says, we have lost our expectancy. What expectancy did Israel have? They expected that they would always be his people. They didn't expect that everything they did would have such powerful ramifications. They understood, we are the special people of the creator of the universe. We can almost get away with anything, like a spoiled brat kid whose parent is a powerful, you know, person in society. The rules don't apply to us because my daddy is so-and-so. So Israel was kind of like that. They were acting like, well, we've got him as our, that's our God, our Elohim. We can get away with almost anything, only to find out that wasn't true. That's when he said, I'm done with you. So he says here, that's kind of the key word. Our bones are dry. our expectancy has perished, and we ourselves have been cut off. So it's not just, they're not mentioning the idea of being dead here. They understand there's a cutting off. He has cut them off. You are not my people. So I believe this is absolutely referring to exactly what Hosea was talking about. Now notice what happens next. He says, therefore, in verse 12, therefore prophesy, and you shall say to them, thus said the Master Yahweh, see, O my people. Now he's referring to them as my people. I am opening your graves and shall bring you up from your graves and shall bring you into the land of Israel. And you shall know that I am Yahweh when I open your graves, O my people, and bring you up from your graves. Now, anybody catch a word that was mentioned like 17 times in those two verses? Graves. Now, the word there is not Sheol. The word there is not Gehenna. The word there, in other words, this is not when we think about death that way. It literally means a sepulcher or a place that you've been entombed, a physical space. And so what did happen to Israel? What did Yahweh do to Israel? He scattered them. He sifted them like through a sieve amongst all the nations as their place that they were then sent to be dispersed and not to be considered as people. So this idea, he says, look, he says, I am opening your graves. Now, what also do we hear Yeshua saying? At some point he says that he went and visited those essentially in the graves. It's that idea of those that have been punished, the word getting to those that were cut off, those who had received no mercy, no compassion. He says, I'm opening your graves and I bring you up from your graves and bring you into the land. This fits completely into all of the restoration of the two house teachings we've done, discovering your identity, etc. He says, and I shall... He says, I open up your graves, O my people, and bring you up from your graves, and I shall put my nature, my spirit in you, and you shall live, and I shall settle you in your own land, and you shall know that I, Yahweh, have spoken, and I have done it, declares Yahweh. So hopefully we're starting to see what's going on here in the first part of Ezekiel 37. It's describing the state of Israel as a whole nation under the Lo Ruchama Lo Ami. No compassion, not my people. But he's saying here in Ezekiel, but I'm going to fulfill the rest of that chapter. He says, but in the same place, the place where your dead bones are sitting there all dried up, I'm going to put life back in you, and I'm going to refer to you as my people. We see that in verse 13. He says, O my people, I am opening up your graves, O my people. So you can see how this is exactly a parallel. It matches perfectly with what Hosea was saying. Now let's continue because there's more to what Hosea said, and we see it play out here in the rest of the chapter. Verse 15. And the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, and you, son of man, take a stick for yourself and write on it, for Yehuda and for the children of Israel, his companions. Take another stick and write on it for Yosef, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companions. And then bring them together for yourself into one stick, and they shall become one in your hand. Now let's understand what he's talking about here. It says, there's a stick for Yehuda and the children of Israel, his companions. So Yehuda is what? Judah is one of the two houses. And then he says, take another and write on it Yosef, the stick of Ephraim, which represents all the house of Israel. Okay, so when this house is split, the northern kingdom known as Israel also is referred to as Ephraim, also is referred to as Yosef. And so they're just making sure that he's covering all of the bases here of what people may think he's covering. It also, for those who don't know, can be confusing. But if you know how he refers to them, you have Judah always being referred to as Judah, but the northern being referred to sometimes as Israel, Yosef, or Ephraim. Because we know that the blessing from Yosef went to Ephraim. So he then represents Yosef. So what's happening here? He says, then you're going to bring the two, the split Israel, into one. This is the whole two-house message, what it should be. It's not about there's supposed to be two houses. Okay, Messianic Judaism says there's only one house. Well, there's only supposed to be one house. Problem is you're not recognizing that there's still two. From after Solomon, it was split into two. With Rehoboam and Jeroboam, we got two. And in that split, Yahweh said, this split is of me. This serves my purposes, at least for the short term. Actually, it seems like a pretty long term when you think of how many years it's been. But very short in the bigger picture of things. But ultimately, I'm going to bring them back into one. Isn't that what we read in Hosea? Okay, Hosea said in that verse, let me just kind of pull it back up real quick here. He said, and the children of Yehuda and the children of Israel shall be gathered together. That's verse 11 of chapter 1. Okay, so they're going to be gathered together, Judah and who? Israel. So what do you see with the two sticks? Exactly that happening. Now let's continue in verse 18. And when the children of your people speak to you, saying, won't you show us what you mean by these? Say to them, thus said the Master Yahweh, see, I am taking the stick of Yosef, which is in the hand of Ephraim, right? Yosef is now represented by Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel, his companions, and I shall give them unto him with the stick of Yehuda and make them one stick, and they shall be one in my hand. Everybody listening at this point in Ezekiel's day understood the nature of the split, the rift in Israel, that there were two separate kingdoms, two separate houses. And he says, and the sticks on which you write shall be in your hand before their eyes. Speak to them, verse 21, thus said the Master Yahweh, see, I am taking the children of Israel from among the Gentiles wherever they have gone, and shall gather them from all around, and I shall bring them into their land. So this is where they're in the graves. They've been scattered and cut off, and they've been spread everywhere. And I'm going to bring them into their land. And I shall make them one nation in the land on the mountains of Israel. And here you go, the rest of verse 11 from Hosea. And one king shall be king over them all. And let them no longer be two nations. And let them no longer be divided into two kingdoms. See, here's the recognition of this is the whole two-house message the way it's supposed to be. They were one. They became two. They're going to be restored back to one. And so really, when we talk about the two houses, we should be talking to it from the point of view of looking forward to the restoration of the two into one. But now we're going to find out what makes the difference. Because remember, they were called not my people. They were called, I'll have no compassion. Can we agree that the people Hosea was talking to were, quote unquote, part of the saved bunch of people that were descendants out of those that were brought out of Egypt, that were covenanted and all of that kind of stuff? Can we at least agree on that? And then he's going to tell them that I'm going to no longer have compassion, that you would no longer be my people. You know what? Doesn't that match John 15 when it says, every branch in me that doesn't stay in me gets cast out? See, we're reading how consistent this message is everywhere. Every branch of me that doesn't stay in me. Can we agree that what the problem with Israel and Judah was, they didn't stay in him, not at least as a cohesive nation. So they had problems because there's consequences to disobedience. There's consequences to being foolish. They were both. And so here he's saying, here's the process back. He says, I'm going to make one nation of them in the land. No longer will there be two, verse 23, and they shall no longer defile themselves with their idols, nor with their disgusting matters, nor with any of their transgressions. What's transgressions? Breaking of the law. Sin is the transgression of the law, the Torah. So he says, they're no longer are they going to be doing their transgressions, and I shall save them. He says he's going to save them. Now, he'd already saved them many times, decided that that particular group of people, I'm done saving you now. But then in this future date, I will save them from all their dwelling places in which they have sinned, and I shall cleanse them, and they shall be my people, and I shall be their Elohim. Now, stop for a second. I shall cleanse them. So what do you picture when you hear cleansing? What do you do when you normally clean something? You wash it. Okay, this goes back to baptism of fire. So there's going to be a mikvah of water to wash and cleanse you. Then there's going to be an infusing more of the truth, the word, the ruach, the spirit, the baptism of spirit, the knowledge, understanding, and relationship that then gets tested by the fire to see where you're at. He says, I'm going to cleanse them, and they shall be my people, and I shall be their Elohim. We're back to Hosea chapter 1, verse 10 and 11. In the same place where they were called not my people, they would now be called the children of the living Elohim, the sons of the living Elohim. Incredible. This is awesome stuff. Okay? He says, but look, I'm going to save them from all their dwelling places in which they have sinned, and I shall cleanse them. Now, the problem is that Christianity would let you feel like cleansing them means he's just going to wash you clean, and now that's just something he does for you by fiat, and it doesn't really... If I were just to go over to you and go, you are now clean, does that automatically change the way you think? Does it change the way you behave? Really? So then why would anybody preach that somehow that happens? Because that's what they're preaching, isn't it? He says, I'm going to cleanse them. How? Through this process of breathing his spirit back into them. We see that earlier in the chapter. His nature is going to come into them. They're going to learn how to be transformed and conformed into his image. They're going to embrace the Shema, hearing and doing. They can embrace the original covenant. What's the covenant? I speak, you do. That's what Yahweh said to them, right? I speak, you obey. You trust that what I say is going to keep you safe, it's going to bless you, it's going to transform you. So here he says, look, they're no longer going to do these things. Why? Because he's going to put that spirit in them. He's going to teach them how to be like him. And their hearts are going to be ready after all the punishment to embrace that. How many of you, and you don't have to raise your hand, but you can if you want. How many of you, one of the reasons why you are where you are right now and embracing Torah is because you finally got to the place where you realize your way doesn't work. That's what's happening here. Can we see that? Israel wasn't just through a short-term little smack on the hand. Okay, bad boy, bad child. No, they went through what felt like the grave. And all dried up. They said, our expectancy has perished. We don't have any expectancy anymore. We've given up. We've quit on the whole deal. Because after all, we've been cut off for so long. He said, no. I made a promise. And I will bring life back into you. And if you are ready, as you finally got into that place where you're done trying to do it your way, and you're ready to do it my way, Yahweh's saying, then I'm more than happy to put flesh back on you and breathe life into you. Because the idea here is the difference is you have to be no longer defiling yourselves with the idols and disgusting matters and your transgressions. He didn't say, I will take it all away from them. He says, they will no longer do things. So just knowing that Yeshua died, was buried and resurrected, and that his death makes it possible for you to avoid the second death doesn't change your behavior just by the fact that you know that. He says here, I shall make them one nation and they shall no longer do these things. They will stop doing the things. By the way, these things that they stopped doing, can we agree? They're the reason they got cut off in the first place. So this is the absurdity. And again, Christians are stuck getting lied to with this stuff. The system is making the problem, but they're telling them this ridiculous thing, which all of us bought into to whatever degree at some point, this ridiculous thing that somehow, because of his death, burial, and resurrection, the things that got you in trouble to need that, you can keep doing it and it's not a problem anymore. But that's what they say. You can still eat, you can go keep eating your pork and shellfish and whatever. Keep worshiping on pagan days. There's no sense in any of this. He says they will no longer do these things. By the way, doesn't this also match up with Ezekiel 22, which we read last time? And it said how they were not separating the clean from the unclean. They were not separating out and identifying the Sabbath. They were not understanding what's profane and what's kadosh. See, it's all consistent here. Now listen, back to Hosea 1, it said, and they will appoint for themselves one. Listen to verse 24 here in Ezekiel. And while it says, and my people, I'll go back to verse 23, and they shall be my people, and I be their Elohim, while David, my servant, is king over them. And they shall have one shepherd and walk in my right rulings and guard my laws and shall do them. That's the key. After this change, they're going to not just say, "Ah, we're saved." They're going to start doing what? They're going to do the covenant. They are going to walk in my right rulings, guard my laws, and do them. That brings us back to Deuteronomy 10:12. And now, Israel, what does Yahweh want from you? To fear him, to walk in all his right rulings, to walk in all his ways? Okay, to love him, to serve him, to guard his commandments. That's your process. It never changed from when Moses said it. It certainly didn't change even before Moses, but Moses is the first one to give it to us and write it down and have it all written for us. He says, so they shall have one shepherd and walk in my right rulings. By the way, how many of us, if we're willing to admit it, have more than one shepherd? We're listening to more than one voice. We're following more than one leadership, more than one guidance. They will have one. The problem with them before is that they were listening to too many. They were picking and choosing whichever one they felt tickled their ear better or whatever it was. He said, they're going to have one shepherd, and they shall dwell in the land, verse 25, they shall dwell in the land that I have given to Yaakov, my servant, where your fathers dwelt, and they shall dwell in it, they and their children, and their children's children, forever, and my servant David be their prince forever. Has that happened yet? Are they in the land yet? Some of them are, not many. Okay, so we're not all in the land, and David is not king. Of course, David here is talking about the descendant of David, David being the metaphor for the Mashiach, the ultimate, you know, great, great king, Yeshua coming. And I shall make a covenant of peace with them, an everlasting covenant it is with them. And I shall place them and increase them, and they shall, I shall place my set-apart place in their midst forever. Now, bear in mind as we're going through this here, and I had a long discussion with an organization one time, and there's other places that I will talk about without naming names, but it's easy for people to think that somehow this is talking about an organization. Yahweh makes it really clear. I. I will gather them. I will bring them. I will place them. It doesn't say anything about an organization, a group, or some ministry doing these things. Although there have been out there a few that claim that they were doing this and want to get everybody to go to the land now. You can go if you want. I'd like to visit. Not interested in living there. Not until after the last war. Because I don't care what anybody says, we need to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Yes, the one that comes after the war. I'm not praying against what's coming. He says it's coming. I'm not going to argue with him. Go read that psalm. That psalm is not talking about the Jerusalem that we have today. Okay, people don't read the psalm. Well, it says we're supposed to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Go read what it says. We are not understanding what it's talking about, the way people want to respond to that whole pray for the peace of Jerusalem thing. And so we should be very careful that we understand the context of that whole psalm. But are we starting to see how Hosea was saying the same thing Ezekiel is saying in Ezekiel 37? Okay, now he says, remember, he says, and I will save them. I mean, the people that have already been saved, and then they were cut off, and then they were saved, and then they were cut off. Saved is not a status. Now, being his people is a status. Guess what? He also took that away from them. He said, then you're no longer my people. Now, of course, the dispensationalists will say, see, Israel blew it. Well, keep reading. Yes, they did. They had a problem. But he never says, I changed my mind then because they blew it and I'm going to go with this group over here. It's still going to be Israel. And I challenge anybody to find anywhere in Scripture where it says otherwise. It's all about Israel ever since it was in Israel, all the way to the end of Revelation. And it won't change. You go to the New Jerusalem, you go are there gates to get into the New Jerusalem? How many? 12. And what are the names on the gates? The 12 tribes. Oh, it's still about Israel? Is there a Gentile gate? No. Christian gate? No. There's the 12 tribes. We have to be careful with that. And so here we're going, let's go back. He says, and I shall make a covenant of peace with them, an everlasting covenant, verse 26. And I shall place them and increase them and shall place my set apart place in their midst forever. And my dwelling place shall be over them and I shall be their Elohim and they shall be my people. Listen to the last verse here. And the Gentiles shall know that I, Yahweh, am setting Israel apart when my set apart place is in their midst forever. So this includes the millennium when they're still Gentiles. This isn't quite going into the kingdom element yet. Some people get mad, I refer to the millennium and then the kingdom. Well, because the verse is like, well, the kingdom of Elohim is at hand and all the other stuff. The way I call the 1,000 years and then the forever, I use the phrase millennium and then kingdom. That's just the way I refer to it, okay? Don't get confused. But this is before the forever. It says, however, it will continue into the forever. The Gentiles will know when I set my place in their midst forever. So there's coming a time where he will no longer say, you're not my people. But he's hoping, well, he knows, that they'll get it at some point. They'll start to actually realize and receive and accept that my way doesn't work. Our way does not work. And so we can then choose what? His way. When we start to realize his way does work. It always has. It always did. And it still does and always will. And that's the difference, okay? That is the difference. So you have Hosea telling us about them being the saved people. We're told, I'm not going to have compassion on you anymore. Oh, well, you know, but that rabbi, that was before there was the New Testament and before Yeshua. Nothing changed. It had to happen. But everybody before and after gets affected the same by what happened in the middle where he was. Right now, we have almost as much time starting to, you know, the longer we go after, it almost balances out how much time there was before. We have a 2,000 years after, we have a few thousand years before. Let's continue now and take this whole thing that we put, and I'll look at Deuteronomy chapter 30. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 30. I'm going to read pretty much the whole chapter here. So remember, what we're looking at is Yahweh has promised to save Israel in the end. He takes his people, he delivers and saves them. He says, look, but one day you're going to mess this thing up. And in messing it up, I'm going to punish you and scatter you. So hopefully you learn your lesson. And then ultimately I'll bring you back out. And it shall be, verse 1, chapter 30, Devarim, Deuteronomy. And it shall be when all these words come upon you, the blessing and the curse, which I have set before you, and you shall bring them back to your heart among all the Gentiles where Yahweh your Elohim drives you. He's already telling them, look, they're standing here at the Jordan about to go into the land. They haven't had a chance to mess up yet. And he's saying, look, you guys are going to do well and receive the blessings. You're going to mess up and receive the cursings. It's going to happen. And he says, look, at some point, you're about to cross into the land. He's already telling them they're going to get scattered to all the nations where the Gentiles are. He says, and you shall bring them back to your heart. What? These words you shall bring back to your heart among the Gentiles where Yahweh your Elohim drives you. And then you shall teshuvah, you shall turn back to Yahweh your Elohim and obey his voice according to all that I command you today with all your heart and with all your being, you and your children. Then Yahweh your Elohim shall turn back your captivity and shall have compassion on you, and he shall turn back and gather you from all the peoples where Yahweh your Elohim has scattered you. Now let's stop and get to the truth. It's straightforward in that verse we just read, in those 2-3 verses we read. Okay, has this happened yet? No. Okay, he has not gathered us from all the peoples where we were scattered yet, has he? No. So we can't say, well, that was for then, but now it's different, because this still hasn't happened. This event that we're waiting for happens after the death, burial, and resurrection of Yeshua. Can we agree? So what does he say is the process? You shall turn back to Yahweh your Elohim and obey his voice with all your heart, with all your being, with all you and your children. Is that what is being taught today by the once saved, always saved Christian crowd? No. Let's just call it what it is. Can we all agree verse 2 is talking about the Exodus 19 covenant? And you shall go back to obeying his voice. Let's understand where covenant fits into all of this. He says, you are saved now. You are the chosen people. You're going into the land and you're going to mess it up. And when you mess it up, you're going to get punished. And in your punishment, which goes beyond the death, burial, and resurrection of Yeshua, because we're still in it, he says, when you get to that point in your punishment where you wake up, when he calls you, opens your eyes, opens your ears, sparks your heart to seek and ask and knock, he says, when that moment comes, you shall turn back to Yahweh and obey his voice. Now, by the way, the reason that this is going to happen is because you're going to start to realize the different ways in your life that you weren't obeying. Because you were doing it in ignorance, not in rebelliousness, for the most part. You didn't know you needed to keep the law. You were told it was done away with. You were told it was awful, burden, and horrible stuff. I mean, it was like the stuff that, oh, stay away, don't touch. Ew. You know, run away as fast as you can. But instead, he's saying, look, you shall turn back to the original covenant. This is the covenant. He renews that covenant with Israel. You see that in Jeremiah 31, 31. I shall renew my covenant, which is the covenant, the one here of obedience. You're going to turn back because, after all, this leads us into the forever. You're going to turn back and he's going to gather you and you're going to obey his voice. Then, wait a minute. He says, then. What does he mean? That means after the other thing. So what comes first? The thing before the then, right? Then. The then comes after turning back to Yahweh, obeying his voice, and keeping his commandments with all your heart and being, you and your children. Then, Yahweh your Elohim shall turn back your captivity. Why are we still in captivity? We haven't done the before the then stuff. The word then can't come until we do the stuff before the word then. We must teshuvah, obey his voice, according to all that Moses commanded. By the way, he makes it really clear you need to do what Moses said, in case anybody wants to put Paul or somebody else in front of all that. Okay? When you start doing what I have commanded you today, with all your heart and being, then Yahweh shall turn back your captivity and shall have compassion on you. It sounds like he's telling us in advance here what's going to happen with Hosea. They'll be in a place where they weren't having compassion. Now Yahweh's going to have compassion. What brings his compassion? The stuff before the then. We will teshuvah. We will make our return back to the path. We're going to start obeying his voice. He'll have compassion on you and he shall turn back and gather you from all the peoples where Yahweh your Elohim has scattered you. That's the process. Anything else is a lie. Anything else is a false lie representation of whatever they think truth is. And so, yes, we have prayer and concern for all of our friends, family, who are immersed in a system that's lying to them, telling them something is true when it's not. There is no way that this system works from cover to cover outside of the idea of he speaks and his creation obeys. There's no exception from cover to cover. Anybody who says otherwise is a liar. Those who say they love him and keep not his commandments are lying. So you're listening to people who don't keep the commandments. By the way, I don't understand this at all, but some of you, maybe not in this room, maybe not even on the live stream, but some of the people out there that are going to hear my voice, you're still listening to people that are not covenanted. Why? Why do you still, but I like that teacher. I like that teacher? Well, you don't have any idea how important they were to me at a time in my life and blah, blah, blah. I get it. Move on. I'm sorry to be so blunt. But why are you getting instruction from uncovenanted people? Yes, you were in an uncovenanted place yourself and that person was helpful to you at the time. I get it. But you're not there anymore. Move on and find somebody covenant to learn from. Okay? Because I love the way people say this, this, and this, and they show me it, and it's coming from somebody who's eating pork, keeping Sunday, keeping Christmas, keeping Easter. and you want me to listen and follow this? Why? Why would I have a source be uncovenanted? You can't find a source that is covenanted? Oh, but they're awesome. They're not awesome. They're talented. But do not get locked into all of that. Don't be impressed by their charisma and their ability to, you know, reach your heart. And, you know, some people just resonate with you. You know what I'm saying? You like a teacher because the way they word things just really works for you. Well, make sure they're working for him and not just for you. Unbelievable. Okay, so he shall turn back and gather you from all the peoples where Yahweh Elohim has scattered you. By the way, why do you think he says over and over and over again, we probably need to do a reset on this teaching, do not do as they do. I'm going to immerse you. Look, Yeshua said the same thing when he said, Father, I do not ask you to take them out of the world, but that they not be of the world. And that you keep them from those that are wicked. I know it says wicked one in most translations, but that's not even in the Greek. Because the wicked can rub off on you. What is the wicked? Those who are breaking the commandments. You want to hang out with them? Guess what you'll end up doing? Breaking the commandments. You kind of are a sum total of who you hang out with, what you read, what you listen to, what you watch, all your inputs. So why would we hang out and spend a lot of time with people that are breaking commandments? Not that they're doing it on purpose. They just don't even think they need to be kept. But you know they need to be kept. Don't let them rub off. Oh, but you're going to convince me that you're going to rub off on them. Okay, how's that working so far? Are you really getting any results with that? Mostly not. Oh, well, you don't understand, Rabbi. I'm going to that Sunday church, though, because, you know, I share truth with them. Really? If you really were doing it, they'd have thrown you out. And you know it, because some of you tried that and got thrown out. So don't tell me you're there sharing stuff with these people. You must be doing it in really tiny little drips and drabs and very quietly in whispers, because if they knew you were doing it, they'd have thrown you out. So don't tell me that you're having some sort of powerful effect. You're there because that's where all your friends are, that's where your family is, and you don't want to leave. Come out of her, my people. Back to chapter 30. We're still only in verse 3 here. I got to finish this chapter. Okay, verse 4, if any of you are driven out to the farthest parts under the heavens, from there Yahweh your Elohim does gather you, and from there he does take you. So he's saying, don't worry where you may end up, Appison, Tennessee, wherever. He says, he's going to be able to find you. He knows where he sent you. And Yahweh your Elohim shall bring you to the land which your fathers possessed, and you shall possess it. And he shall do good to you and increase you more than your fathers. And Yahweh your Elohim shall circumcise your heart and the heart of your seed to love Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart and with all your being so that you might live. And realize when he says things like that, it's underlying that in the idiomatic phraseology of it is he will cause you to make choices that will bring this about. In other words, he'll put you in a position where you'll have choices to make which will bring about the circumcision of heart. He's not just going to wave his powerful, almighty hand and just have you be your heart circumcised. We did that with how many parts of What Are You Thinking? It's changing our thoughts and go through the heart of the matter teaching and work on your heart. And you take those two teachings, you understand how you end up with a circumcised heart. You cut off the flesh out of your heart, the desires of the flesh. He says, because without a circumcised heart, you really can't love him with all your heart, with all your being, because you have another part of you pulled emotionally in a different direction. Isn't that true? Your heart, with all that emotion, is what leads to action, right? We talked about thoughts, emotions lead to actions. And so if your heart still is not circumcised, in other words, the flesh is cut off of it, guess what you do sometimes? You have emotions to go do fleshly things. And so that's why your heart needs to be circumcised, so that you're no longer being pulled and desiring to do fleshly things. Oh, but you'd love it if he would just do that for you. Please come and circumcise my heart. Well, he's trying to. He's letting you suffer so that you figure it out. And realize that your suffering is because of the fleshly part of your heart. You get the fleshly part of your heart under control and you're not going to suffer. But you want and you desire and you crave things that you shouldn't want, desire, or crave. Guess what it leads to? Suffering. At some point, the light bulb should go on and go, oh, That's why I suffer. Because I want and crave and desire the wrong things. So my wrong things that I desire lead to wrong actions bring bad results. It's reaping and sowing. It's that causative thing. Remember we talked about that, of course, after wrong actions, what happens? Become bad habits. What do bad habits lead you to? A destiny you really didn't want. You end up in a place you didn't hope to go. And then you act all surprised when you get there. That makes him laugh. Parents do this with children. We tell them not to do certain things. We tell them what's going to happen if they do it. Then they do it, and they act shocked when it goes exactly the way we said it would. I can't believe it broke and whatever. And you're like, I told you it would. And they sit there shocked. Of course, one day they look at you and go, how did you know? Now we could start working forward. How did you know? Well, partially because I was as dumb as you one day. And after doing those dumb things long enough, I realized that doing it my way without guidance and instruction from somebody wiser is dumb. It doesn't yield good fruit. All right, let's continue. Where am I? Let's see. Verse 7. And Yahweh, your Elohim, shall put all these curses on your enemies and on those who hate you and persecute you. And you shall turn back. Again, listen to what he's saying. This is now at least the second time in this chapter. You're going to turn back and obey the voice and do all his commands, which I command you today. This, can we still again agree? We're still in that future time that we haven't gotten to yet. If this is talking about a future time, in that future time, obeying the voice of Yahweh and the commandments that Moses shared from Yahweh is the key. Is there any argument? It's the key right here. Oh, no, it's been done away with the nail to the cross. Really? This is talking about events that happen after the cross, after the death, burial, and resurrection. Again, the key is you shall turn back and obey the voice and do all his commands that I command you today. And Yahweh your Elohim shall make you have excess in all the works of your hand, in the fruit of your body, the fruit of your livestock, in the fruit of the ground for good. For Yahweh turns back to rejoice over you for good as he rejoiced over your fathers. If, you know, how many of you were sold the unconditional blah, blah, blah when you were in church? Anybody told there was an if? There's a lot of ifs in this book. Matter of fact, everything is based on if. If you agree to obey my voice and do everything I say, then I shall. If then. Here it is again. He says, if you obey the voice of Yahweh Elohim to guard his commands and his laws, which were written in this book of the Torah, if you turn back to Yahweh Elohim with all your heart, with all your being, then the excess and everything else in verse 9 will come. If you do these things. Oh, no, but I'm once saved, always saved. I don't have to do anything. Really? Doesn't sound that way to me in Moses' writings. And he's talking about a time we still haven't even gotten to yet. Continuing, he says, here's the reality check for everyone. For this command, what command? Everything he just said, which I am commanding you today, is not too hard for you. It's not far off. It's not up in the sky or in the heavens to say who's going to go up there and get it for us and bring it to us and cause us to hear it so that we do it. By the way, it still has the idea of going to bring it so that we hear it so that we do it. You know, Paul talks about that, right? How can one know unless someone comes and shares? And how can someone come and share unless they're sent? I don't know the verse quote exactly, but you know what I'm talking about? Well, there it is right here. He's saying, look, you've been covenanted. You were there. You received. You're supposed to share this with your children. You don't need for someone to come. The Gentiles do. When we're starting to regather, they do. That's why Yeshua trained up those to go out and start the process. But you who are here, you have gone through the desert. You have been through this journey. You know what you need to do. You don't have anybody need you to come to cause you to hear it so that you do it. He says, nor is it beyond the sea to say, who shall bring it for us? And cause us to hear it so that we do it? For the word is very near you, in your mouth and in your heart to do it. The word's very near you. It's in your mouth. You know it. Now, of course, if you don't know it, then you still need someone to come and bring it to you from wherever. Guess what? Yahweh calls you, pokes you, disturbs your peace, opens your eyes, opens your ears, and then has you start searching for someone who's going to cause you to hear it so that you do it. Not just hear it, but do it. This is Shema. Hear, O Yisrael. Shema Yisrael. Hear and do something with what you just heard. Take action. Respond to what you hear. He says, it's near you. It's in your heart. It's in your mouth. He says, see, I have set before you. He says, I have set before you. It means he's already done it. So that means that whatever he's talking about, it, he's already said previously. Can we agree? So what I've said previously and setting that before you today, guess what? It's life and good, death and evil. He said, I've explained to you what brings both. What brings life, what brings good things, what brings death, what brings evil things. And that I am commanding you today to love Yahweh your Elohim, to walk in his ways, guard his commands and his laws and his right rulings, and you shall live and increase, and Yahweh your Elohim shall bless you in the land which you go to possess. How does a New Testament Christian, except for the fact that we know there's blindness and delusion and the hardening and all the things that he did to them, so to speak, so I don't blame them. This proves the other stuff true, that they can't see, okay? Make sure, you know, I get so attacked for this. I am not attacking them. But if there was not a blindness, in other words, if he has not allowed them not to be able to see or hear or receive, how could they read this, because this proves the other part true, and come up with somehow, after reading all of Deuteronomy and everything previous to this, that somehow all of this is no good and done away with? They can't, except that they've inherited lies, they've been given a strong delusion, and it requires him, our creator, to personally take away the scales, unclog the ears, and open the heart, proving the word true. Which, by the way, proves the New Testament true, because the Old Testament doesn't say any of that. So some of you have friends or personally maybe struggling with some of the problems with the New Testament and maybe thinking about running into Judaism. Well, guess what? This proves your New Testament true, because the only place it says it's in the New Testament, and you've experienced it and know it's true. Think about that proof. There is no explanation why totally reasonable, semi-intelligent, or very intelligent people that you know come up to the ridiculous conclusions they come up with unless that was true. And you will sit there and show them this stuff. How could Yahweh be so adamant about obedience? Look, he didn't just say, do what I say. He says, my commandments, my laws, my right rulings. I mean, he breaks it down to every single detail, only to have it all go, whoosh. Okay, you didn't really need all that stuff. It wasn't really important. That's ridiculous. The only way your friends and family members can't see this is because they can't see it, not because they won't. So don't blame them, but let that be a strong and powerful proof that legitimizes your New Testament. Because it's in there that we're told that truth. We're told that they can't see unless he opens the eyes. We're told that they can't hear unless he opens the ears. Now, there are some quotes from the Old Testament about that, but we have that played out beautifully in the New. No one can come to see this unless the Father draws. If he hasn't drawn, it's going to look like nonsense to them. This is all clearly laid out in the New, not in the Old. And we see it play out perfectly and consistently with everybody else we know. They're not stubborn. They're not stupid. They just have not had it happen to them what happened to you yet. So don't pick on them. All of what I said is all directed towards a system that has them trapped. Not their fault. You were there too. Wasn't your fault either. Just understand that as we go through this. So continuing here, he says, look, see, I set before you today life and good, death and evil, and I'm commanding you today to love Yahweh your Elohim, walk in his ways, guard his commands, his laws, his right rulings, and you shall live and increase, and Yahweh your Elohim shall bless you in the land which you go to possess. But if, oh, there's that word if again. If your heart turns away, every branch in me that doesn't stay in me. You think Yeshua knew the Old Testament? He's the one telling Moses what to say. Every branch in me, if your heart turns away, these certainly sound like saved people to me, and you do not obey and shall be drawn away. These are backsliders, as the Baptist guy told me, right? And you do not obey and you shall be drawn away, and you shall bow down to other mighty ones and serve them. Listen now. I have declared that you're once saved, always saved. Don't worry about it. You still get in. That's what he told me. I asked him, I said, if the backslider dies in his backsliding, does he still get in? He said, of course he does. Moses doesn't think so. He says, this is actually Yahweh speaking through Moses. He says, if your heart turns away and you do not obey and are drawn away and shall bow down to other mighty ones and serve them, I have declared to you today that you shall certainly perish. By the way, he doesn't say you'll be tortured forever in a burning hell. He says you will perish. Matches John 15, by the way, when he says they're going to be gathered up, thrown in the fire, and they're just burned up. You will perish. And you shall not prolong your days in the land which you are passing over the Jordan to enter and possess. I have called the heavens and earth as witnesses today against you. The law, you know, they want to attack the law because the law is a witness against you. It's not like it's against you. It's a witness that says, if you do this, this is going to happen. And if you do this, that's going to happen. And so you can't say you didn't know. That's what it means as a witness. He says, I call the heavens and earth as witnesses. As long as they're still there, this is still valid. I looked up. The sun's still there. The heavens are still there. The earth is still there. The heavens and the earth are witnesses. I have set before, by the way, it doesn't matter if it's round or flat, it's still a witness. Just a little jab there. And I don't care what shape it is, I care that it's a witness. I have called the heavens and earth as witnesses today against you. I've set before you, listen, I've set before you life and death, blessing and the curse. And now he's going to encourage them. Therefore, choose life so that you live, both you and your. He's begging them. He's begging them. Choose life so that you live, both you and your seed. He says, to love Yahweh your Elohim, to obey his voice, and to cling to him. There's a teaching in that called cling, cleave, hold fast. We're clinging to all the wrong things. Cling to him, for he is your life and the length of your days, to dwell in the land which Yahweh swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give to them. So what is he saying to us here? Let's wrap this up. And actually, we didn't get a whole lot done there, did we? Just a little section on the top. I guess there's going to be a part five. Okay. Or six or seven or whatever. In today, we're looking at what Yahweh had said to them. He's saying, look, this people that I, this is going back to part three, going into part four. There is a people that are saved out of Egypt, the people that I've saved and to bring onto myself that are covenanted with me, that they are not going to always be saved because they're going to make bad choices. And so I will cut them off and call them not my people. However, there is a path to the promise made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In other words, there will be those that will eventually get to receive the, you are my people. You are the children of the living Elohim. But the process is explained. It was explained in Hosea. It's explained in Ezekiel. Explained in Deuteronomy. Explained everywhere. It's about teshuvah. When you turn back. Okay, turn back from what? From doing it your way to doing it his way. Turn back from going the wrong direction to the right direction. When you turn back. Have you ever been going any place and you had to turn back? Sometimes it's because what? You forgot something maybe? You had to go back and get it? Or you realize you made a wrong turn, so you have to turn back, get back to where you made the wrong turn and go a different way? You realize there's something wrong with where you're going, and so you stop. Oh, by the way, that's probably the first important thing. Stop! Stop what you're doing. Stop where you're going. Because you're not going to turn back going full speed ahead. You're going to basically just like screech and crash and, you know, whatever. You have to stop first. And once you stop, you can turn and go the other way. So stop what you're doing. Stop going the wrong way. And if you're not sure, stop anyway and reevaluate. Take a time out, take a pause, and say, okay, am I going the right way? Have you ever been going someplace and stopped and realized you actually were going the right way, but other times you stopped and paused and realized you weren't, but it was good that you stopped and got your bearings and looked something up or checked your GPS or whatever it was or called somebody just to make sure that you're going the right way? Sometimes you were, sometimes you weren't. But it was good to stop. So stop and check out what's going on in your life and see, are you going the right way? If not, turn around and get back on the path in the areas of your life that you're still struggling with. Because he lays that out for us. This is the process. And this process does not change all of a sudden at the death, burial, and resurrection. That's a piece of this process. What did the death, burial, and resurrection do? It made this process have value. Did we catch that? Without the death, burial, and resurrection, this process really doesn't do anything anyway. Except maybe it affects some of your in the here and now blessings and cursings, but ultimately in the big picture sense of it. Sin requires death. You've all sinned, the death penalty's there. So his death, burial, and resurrection makes this process have value in the ultimate sense of it. Of course, if you take his death, burial, and resurrection and use it as an excuse for licentiousness or license to break commandments because you've now been told and you bought into the idea that they were done away with, then it makes his death, burial, and resurrection of no use whatsoever and have no value. Are we getting this? And hopefully this will make some sense for everyone. Let's pray. Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King, Father, we come before you. And Father, we want to understand salvation. We want to understand what it is that you've laid out in your plan and how salvation plays into it and where Yeshua's part in this is as far as the death, burial, and resurrection and where our faith comes into us and our works. By the way, we just looked at throughout this whole thing, all those ifs says the salvation is linked to what? Our faith and belief to do the works. If you obey, why would you obey? Because you have faith that it'll bring the results. Moses promised us life and death, blessing and cursing, is based on our faith in that we make our choices to do the works that ultimately brings the salvation or not. Hopefully we get that. Father, help us to get that. Help us to receive that. Help us to understand what it means when you lay out these things in your word to turn back to teshuvah, that's predicated on our getting our hearts right, making the right choices, desiring with all of our heart and being that covenant of obedience. Father, this is a very hard thing for us to do in a society that has been marketed to and just oppressed with this relentless, the law is done away with. All you need to do is believe that the Messiah lives and that he died and was resurrected, and now he's alive. And that there's no need to do. And so that's where we get away from me, you workers of lawlessness. I didn't know you. I didn't have a relationship. We want a relationship with you. We understand that relationship is based on obedience and submission and trust and faith in that obedience to bring the blessings and the life you've promised us. So, Father, help us to receive that and stop fighting it and struggling and debating it and arguing with it and everything else. Just let us yield to you and get out of the way. Father, we love you. We thank you. We praise you, giving you all glory and all honor as we ask that you would help us to take from today whatever we needed to add it into our lives, to correct whatever needs to be corrected as we walk forward in the transformation process of becoming more and more like Yeshua. And so, Father, it's in his name, in Yeshua, our Messiah's name, that we pray. Amen. Amen.